Welcome to KSKA's A Closer Look. I'm Ellen Lockyer. The Matanuska Valley has been the heart of Alaska's agricultural industry since the days of the pioneer colonists. But changing times demand updated methods of production to meet the increasing demand for fresh produce. A growing market for local foods could benefit consumers and producers alike. But for the lack of a standardized processing facility in the valley. An agricultural processing and product development center has been a dream of Matanuska Valley growers since the 1960s, although like many dreams, it may not always mirror reality. Today, we'll take a closer look at whether or not the Agricultural Center could become reality anytime soon. Remember the tale about the princess and the pea? Although seemingly inconsequential, it was the pea that sparked the action that drove the story. And it was the pea that sparked the first federally funded study of Matanuska Valley agricultural potential. In 1968, a University of Alaska report found Mat Valley peas, compared with their lower 48 counterparts, to be of superior quality while providing greater harvests per acre.
We don't have a pea industry up here because we don't have a way to freeze them, but we have fabulous peas.
Marion Romano is a former Matanuska Susitna Borough employee who has followed the fortunes of the planned agricultural center for years. But she says it will take more than tasty fresh produce to get the facility built.
It's not just somebody's idea of it might, you know, this will be great, let's build it. It's, I have a product that I want to sell, and I believe there's a market who wants to buy it. Then you can move forward with an entrepreneur who's ready for that challenge.
Sadly, the Peace Study found that 1960s Alaska had not the population to support a pea production facility. But these days, Alaska's population is growing, and with it, demand for locally produced food.
Throw that one out. That is not acceptable. Okay, guys, I'm going to show you again.
Right below Pioneer Peak, Paula G. Oak's 600 acres of produce spreads out toward the local landmark known as the Butte. Razor straight lines of vegetables, lettuce, kale, cabbage and broccoli are clothed in every imaginable shade of green, like a lush promise of Palmer's agricultural future. In late August, Paula works alongside a crew of pickers, showing a dozen or more of them how to properly cut and bunch kale leaves destined for her father's wholesale produce market. The kale is stacked in waxed cardboard boxes ready for shipping.
It all stays in state. It goes to the local grocery stores and to the wholesalers and military.
The downside, she says, it all stops in fall. Carrots, potatoes, and cabbage will store until December, but most of her production halts with the frost. Could an agricultural center help her business expand?
Definitely. I would like to expand in those areas, like as far as the broccoli production and the cabbage production, and maybe go a little less with some of the other items that I'm raising. I would like to see them go into such things as maybe we could have, maybe they could produce like cream of broccoli soup and potato soup and some of those things utilizing what we grow here.
Since the mid-1990s, the borough has acquired grants to pay for a series of studies on the feasibility of an agricultural center. The borough even gave the state $75,000 for a market analysis related to a central processing facility. Borough residents have approved $11 million in bonds for a nutrition services center now built, owned, and operated by the Matsu School District for processing school lunches. The proposed agricultural center is expected to complement the nutrition center.
I forgot to turn that off. Let me catch this since it's here already. DeVilbiss.
Larry DeVilbiss sits behind the wide borough mayor's desk, but with his sturdy work shirt and Wolverine farm cap, he looks like someone who has just come in from milking the cows. Actually, he has just come in from milking his two dairy cows. DeVilbiss raises beef cattle now, but started out as a carrot producer.
As far as I know, we were the first farmers in the state that sustained ourselves just basically growing carrots. And, you know, we could do that with existing infrastructure on the farm, but we came to a point where we realized about 50% of the carrot market was in what's now called the baby peeled carrots that are bagged and everything. That's a level of processing that you cannot do in an ordinary farm root cellar. You've got to have a DEC-approved facility.
DeVilbiss says the Agricultural Center is on the borough's legislative and federal wish list, although it takes a back seat to big projects like the Kinnick Arm Crossing. But the farmer in DeVilbiss understands the need for the processing center.
But if this center had been here, I imagine we would have at least used that center for a step towards developing that venue as well. That's just carrots. Peas are another product that could easily be sold year-round if we had a way to flash freeze them.
DeVilbiss says in his carrot farmer days, he outgrew his own facilities and had to lease Anchorage storage space in order to expand his business.
So I realized that the need to work with infrastructure that was out of my own ownership was advantageous. And I think there's a new generation of farmers that we need to grow out of the what I would call the farmer's market phase, where they're just seasonally selling fresh produce, into the phase of managing a business that goes year-round. And I think this facility would help them do that.
Like Romano, DeVilbiss, too, says it will take entrepreneurs to get things moving.
From a pragmatic point of view, I think federal money is not going to be anywhere near in the proportions we got it in the past on a per capita basis. And we're going to have to just start taking a little more responsibility for the things that we have to have and maybe bond or finance them ourselves.
Last year, the Borough Assembly put out a request for proposals for design documents and began searching for a contractor with a $250,000 state grant scored in 2006, thanks to then-Senator Lyda Green. That design is complete. There's just no money for construction yet. So the project languishes for the time being, although interest in it does not die. Marion Romano says although the buy locally grown foods trend is burgeoning, it may not be enough to ignite a fire under the project. Romano says pre-Trans-Alaska pipeline, Alaskans were pretty self-sufficient regarding food, but increases since then in population, income, and improved transportation since the 1970s changed all that.
And then so much additional freight came up that things got more freight got more affordable, and of course the industrial agriculture continued to grow, and it's cheaper and easier to buy something that's been shipped up.
Romano says food trends won't change the status quo.
If there's a farmer and a buyer who both think there should be some broccoli available in the winter, then it's time. And getting to that place with the farmer and a market that's established or identified, that's the piece that will make it happen or not happen.
She says it has to be a combination of business savvy and market and consumer support. And she cautions although the design of the center is complete, it's still on paper.
It's hard to say if it's time for a whole center. I mean, the research and the work that went into looking at the current center as it's described on paper is sort of hypothetical.
Carol Kenley and Bruce Bush are Palmer entrepreneurs working on a commercial rhubarb juice venture. Kenley grows and sells vegetables from her Palmer garden at farm stands in the valley and in Anchorage. But she envisions acres of rhubarb someday outside her kitchen window.
And why juice would be a great idea is you would sell the big stock as your fresh market. Some could go to a chopped frozen rhubarb, but all the tiny stuff you could juice. All the stuff that's too big you could juice.
One thing that is standing in the way of success: there is no state-approved commercial kitchen in the area for their use, so Kenley is building one on her property at her own expense. The lack of commercial production facilities has hamstrung a potential value-added benefit, Bush says. Mass rhubarb production is what Kenley and Bush would like to do. Bush says Alaska has the available land and the climate to grow it. He's growing enough in summers right now to supply produce wholesalers in Anchorage.
Kind of like a cranberries, people making stuff out of cranberries everywhere. We're trying to build up a market there. And then, well, like I say, once these markets get started or these processor people that want this rhubarb get started, then I would fall back on just the farming end. Somebody's got to grow it. We're good at growing it, so we'd stay on the growing part.
I wouldn't. Probably would. Yeah, cauliflower does, it's broccoli that doesn't.
Yes, broccoli.
Yeah, that's
Art Keyes is a valley grower who has helped to boost the popularity of Anchorage farmers markets. In summer, Keyes mans outdoor stands at the Diamond Mall and at other city locations during the week. He's recently closed his community-supported agriculture business, one that provided weekly baskets of fresh produce to subscribers. The reason? It doesn't make economic sense, since to provide fresh vegetables all year, some of the produce has to be brought in from out of state.
You know, then you have things with the fuel volatility. You end up with one week a case of cucumbers is $25, and the next week it's $75. So that volatility is really not a fun thing to deal with.
Keyes isn't shutting down his Glacier Valley farm, though. He says an agricultural center would not have helped his community-supported agriculture venture, but it sure would help the venture he's got in mind for the future.
My business isn't big enough yet, I don't think, to really utilize that. I could see maybe if we're ever able to produce strawberries in abundance, that something like that could be really beneficial, because there's always a cull strawberry. And if you had a kitchen, you know, a facility, I think you're talking storage and a kitchen, it's all kind of a one multi-use room. And then there's possibility of taking those berries and making a value-added product out of them that you could, you know, freeze or store in some manner.
Keyes says a processing center with flash freezing capabilities could put Alaska strawberries into a larger market. He says 16,000 pounds of the sweet fruit are sold each month in Anchorage supermarkets. Most of those are imported. It was the lack of freezing capability that put the kibosh on Valley commercial pea production. Paula Jayoke says having commercial freezing capabilities nearby would be handy and would allow her to utilize crops that she otherwise can't sell.
You know, we raise a lot of cabbage, and like the oversize, we don't have a market for. And I guess I envision that they could make, like coleslaw and sauerkraut and that type of stuff. And we have potatoes that we could run through a processing plant. And of course, you know, there's a big demand for shredded lettuce. All of the Burger Kings and McDonald's use that. So, we could expand a lot on those kind of crops. And broccoli, I mean, frozen broccoli is one of those things.
But Keyes points out that the greater issue is sustainability, and that an agricultural center would have to go hand in hand with efforts to ensure preservation of agricultural land in the valley.
What I would say is local agriculture in whatever form, whether it's hay field, a vegetable field, potato field, it doesn't matter. If it's local agriculture, it's sustainable. It's probably one of the only sustainable industries that we have. I mean, literally, well, a fishery would be sustainable. It is local sustainable agriculture. It's if we're going to live in Alaska, if we're going to have our descendants live in Alaska, we need it. It's going to be vital for the future generations. So I hope that the trend is to help preserve the agriculture lands. That's probably the most important thing that I can see, because if you have build an agriculture center that processes fruits and veggies, and then you develop all your agriculture lands into gravel pits and subdivisions and strip malls, there's no future for the community as far as I'm concerned.
Keyes farms only 3 acres, but he says he employs 12 workers and has a $36,000 payroll annually. Expanding the agricultural potential of the valley means jobs. And Agriculture Center boosters like Marion Romano say in a job-starved economy, the Agricultural Center would create work. Diane Peck with the Alaska Food Council said in a radio interview on the Alaska Public Radio Network that Alaskans ship billions of dollars spent in supermarkets to their owners out of state. But in reality, are we sort of more and more dependent on the supermarket?
I think when it comes to most Alaskans, we are very dependent on outside food sources. We're not sure the exact statistics, but there's an estimate that about $2.5 billion that Alaskans spend on food actually gets shipped down to the lower 48 because we're so dependent on the stores now and the food that they bring up from the lower 48.
And money talks. The double punch of job creation and keeping money in the state has caused some to give the Agricultural Center a new look. Borough Mayor DeVilbiss says it will take $25 million to build the agricultural facility.
I would say the need for that facility is reflected in the fact that as easy as it is to grow things like peas and broccoli and potatoes here, the fact that none of those products are available in the wintertime and none of them are available in any processed manner is evidence that we could be multiplying the availability of those products and the quantities that could be grown here. The idea here is that a small producer could lease this facility, develop his markets, prove the process, and then move out and go commercial on his own.
Jim Nordland is the state director for the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Rural Development Program in Palmer. Nordland says the Rural Development Program is aimed at providing grants and loans to communities for quality of life and economic vitality purposes.
We would love to participate in helping to fund an agricultural processing facility in the Mat-Su Valley. And I think there's a pretty broad consensus in the valley that there's more value to be added to the agricultural products in the valley, and that somebody should go into business to process that product and ultimately bring home more revenue to the farmers. What's being proposed right now, what's the problem right now is it's a little bit unclear what entity would be the entity to borrow money for this facility. And the Farm Services Agency and us, to some degree, are trying to work with people to clarify, who would be the entity that would be borrowing the money.
So one entity has to step up to the plate. On a brilliant fall day, Anchorage shoppers are selecting produce in a local grocery store.
Look at this. We've got some Alaska-grown carrots, and we have some Alaska-grown potatoes, and it's turning to winter. We're not going to see any more of these Alaska-grown products here in the grocery stores.
One of them is Dan Constantine, executive director of the Alaska Farm Service Agency. Constantine says under the current administration's push to create jobs, the Agricultural Center is drawing new enthusiasm. He adds a processing center is a good strategy to address two problems: how to create more markets and how to store and process summer-only vegetables. But first things first.
We need to develop a business plan. We need to understand the market. Need to do a little bit more market research, talk to some of the potential buyers, whether it's the grocery stores or the hospitals or the schools, and get an understanding of what kind of product they are looking for, what they would buy. And then we need to go to the farmers and make sure they're in a position to be able to grow that product, whether it's broccoli or peas or rhubarb, and that they are ready to grow a big enough quantity of that to supply the processing center, to supply the markets.
So deciding just what crops to market is an initial step. Constantine says that's got to come before even thinking about financing.
The quantities that are grown there, I think, are large enough to support a processing facility. But right now, I think the challenge is to really design the right size facility, to understand what the market is, what kind of product do Alaskan consumers really want.
As to which ventures would be best suited to an agricultural center, Constantine says his agency has begun setting up a round of meetings with potential buyers to identify market opportunities. The meetings start this month. Valley farmers have always been a hardy and innovative bunch. Coming from a farming family, Mayor de Vilba says over time he's seen a lot of changes, and two changes evident in today's state, population and labor force, have to be taken into consideration. With unemployment high, it shouldn't be too hard to fill jobs.
When I was a kid, one farmer could have easily grown enough potatoes to feed the whole state, and so you had half a dozen farmers that were competing with each other and trying to manipulate bids for the military and contracts with the grocery stores and stuff. But that's all different now. We still grow surpluses of potatoes, but the population base is such that we can sell enough quantity of these products to keep going on a viable basis.
And labor force?
And again, that varies. When we started Carrots, our main labor force, besides our own family, were Vietnamese immigrants. And that shifted from Vietnamese to Russian immigrants. And right now, you know, I'm not sure how that would be filled, because our own farm isn't involved in that. But there are innovative ways of sharecropping and coming up with the labor side of it.
Besides creating work locally, Constantine says a Valley production facility could turn some of that flow of grocery dollars out of the state back into Alaska.
Yeah, back in 1955, of all the food we ate in Alaska, 55% of that was actually produced right here in Alaska. And today, it's less than 5%. And that's right, so if you think about the economics of this, Alaskans spend over $2 billion a year on food, generally, whether it's in the grocery store or in restaurants. But we spend over $2 billion in food, and $2 billion a year on food. And so $2 billion of Alaskans' money are leaving this state when they could be staying in Alaska, staying in our own communities. I mean, just think if we increased it by 10%. Less than 5% right now is produced here. If we move that up to, say, 15% of the food that we ate, we're not even getting back to the back in 1955 when it was 55%. But even if we just moved it 10%, that'd be $200 million of more dollars that would be circulating around our communities. And what they also say about the agriculture sector is that the multiplier effect, not only does that money go to our farmers and our processors and our distributors, but it goes to the people who support them. It goes to the local farm machinery, and it goes to the fuel, and it goes to all the things that are needed. So that money bounces around our economy about 7 times. So that extra $200 million would generate over a billion dollars of increased economic activity in Alaska.
And Constantine says even with federal funds for these kinds of projects getting scarce, there are alternatives to raising capital, although the farmers themselves could be required to take on some of the risk.
But I think it's time to revisit them. Things have changed. The farmers are growing different things. The markets are looking for different things. And the costs or the financing potential have changed. I think the last time that we looked seriously at building a processing facility was under the assumption that the federal government would be able to fund the full amount of a $14 million processing facility. Well, right now, the federal government doesn't have that kind of money, and that's not likely to happen. So I think we need to design the facility and then go out and look for the financing from some different areas. It could be some from the federal government, but I think we're going to need some private sector investment. I think there's some private sector potential for some private entrepreneurs to understand that there's some money to be made in this business and they may want to invest. I also think the farmers themselves need to have some ownership in a processing facility like this. And this is what we've seen around the country. The ones that are successful have all those three kinds of financing.
But getting some farmers on board could be the hardest hurdle, DeVilbiss says.
Probably one of the biggest detractors, these things that interface between the private sector and public facilities is held with a great deal of skepticism on the part of most farmers. Are pretty independent. They're independent thinkers. The concept of working under a lease in somebody else's facility is just hard to get a lot of farmers to think that way or to take that step. We learned that about 40% of our local customer base was moving out of state within 5 years. So it's something you've got to maintain and develop.
Although DeVilbiss says he believes the entrepreneurs that may spark the venture are already in the valley.
From statistics I've seen in the past, this Mat-Su Borough is one of the United States' leading concentrations of entrepreneurs. So I know they're there. Organizing and tapping that, though, into a government-owned facility is probably the most complicated part of the process.
Alaskan entrepreneurs are successfully marketing birch syrup, potato chips, cheese, milk, and other locally produced products on their own dime, not to mention the produce stands at farmers' markets that increasingly sprout up around Anchorage from May to October. So the energy to get Alaska's produce out to the public is apparent. Although the Valley's Agricultural Processing and Product Development Center remains in limbo for the time being, like a twist on the old adage, if you build it, they will come. In Mat-Su, they are already here. It has not been built yet. I'm Ellen Lockyer. This has been A Closer Look, a production of KSKA-FM Anchorage. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear this broadcast again or tell a friend about it, it's available on our website, alaskapublic.org.